From Utah Public Radio, this is Undisciplined. I'm Matthew LaPlante. There is a prevailing belief that women are generally more concerned about climate change than men. And there is some prior evidence for this in surveys, but some of this is also rooted in gender stereotypes that assume women are more nurturing, more concerned about their children and grandchildren. And these aren't negative stereotypes per se, but they are assumptions. And researchers from the Yale Program on Climate Change Communication decided that they wanted to test these assumptions. And so they did, as part of an international survey to examine public climate change knowledge, attitudes, policy preferences, and behavior among men and women in nearly 200 countries and territories worldwide. And what has been emerging from these data is fascinating. For one thing, it turns out that it's not universally true that women are more concerned about climate than men. That, the researchers have concluded, is really context dependent, with cultures and economies and education playing major roles in impacting gendered attitudes about global warming. Maria Werner is working now on a paper about these findings, and she and her collaborators recently wrote about the subject on the center's website. Werner is a researcher at the Yale School of the Environment, where her work is focused on comparative politics with a specific emphasis on climate change and public opinion. Maria Werner, welcome.
Hi, Matthew. Thanks for having me.
Maria, you teach a lot of introductory and upper-level political science courses, so you engage with a lot of students, both at Yale and previously at the University of Colorado, where you were for 5 years. Talk to me broadly about the attitudes about climate change that you see in your students in the classroom.
I guess from what I can grasp, we can surely see that younger people, especially students, those who are getting their college education, are in general more concerned about climate change than older folks. This has been a pretty clear pattern in both survey research, but you could also see that anecdotally in your everyday life.
When students come to learn that your specialty above and beyond comparative politics is looking at different climate change attitudes and beliefs, do they come talk to you? Are you a climate change confidant, so to speak?
I do see some student curiosity, but oftentimes they just see me as a traditional political scientist that can talk about climate change.
What made you say, you know what, okay, like political science is everything, right? But I want to really hone in on comparative beliefs about climate. What was the thing that made you go, that's what I want to be spending a lot of time hovered over a computer doing?
So I guess this just comes from my early teenage year experiences. Back in Lithuania, I was involved in the green movement, and then I joined the animal rights organization. So yeah, that was me, you know, when I was 16.
You wanted to change the world a little bit.
Oh, I was very idealistic. And then I turned to be cynical, like a lot of people do when they grow up.
Oh, no. How did it happen? You're still too young a researcher to be cynical.
I don't know. I think academia can do that for you. Like if you get through your PhD, something just like happens.
It's true. They beat all of that optimism out of you. So you mentioned you grew up in Lithuania. I know you studied abroad for a time in Poland. You did a master's degree in London, a PhD in Colorado. I assume that along the way, the fact that climate change attitudes and beliefs is context dependent became pretty glaring. I mean, if you travel around the world, the fact that any attitudes and beliefs are context dependent become really obvious, right?
Yeah, that is true.
So we live in a pretty fantastic era for research. I mean, like our moms and dads, our grandparents would like, they'd be blown away by this idea, right? That if you wonder what global attitudes are on a certain issue, there are actually ways to study that, to do a pretty you know, easily to collect data from literally nearly every country on the planet. Talk about how you went about doing that for this report.
So actually, Yale Program on Climate Change Communication has been collecting these data for a few years. And that started before I joined the team. But one of the reasons why they were interested in hiring me is my background in comparative and global politics. They immediately thought this would be a good person to really work with these data and, you know, someone who could do interesting research using it. So this is a multi-partner endeavor. So like we collect these data with Meta and RARES Center for Behavior and the Environment. And basically our role is mostly really consulting and advising them on the questions that they should pick, as like we have this know-how about a good questions on climate change. But ultimately, the data is collected through Facebook, and that's how we can get a good reach. That's how we can do this in nearly 200 countries and territories worldwide. Like, of course, afterward, we are really adjusting these data to be more representative in terms of national benchmarks, right? Because not everyone in every country uses Facebook, obviously, but there are some corrections.
Yeah, yeah. And so what happens here is that like people pop onto Facebook and they get a survey invitation in their newsfeed, right?
Exactly. And it's all randomly assigned according to all the rules.
And then one of the limitations here, as you mentioned, is that like we're working with self-reported data, we're dealing with individuals with some level of technological skill and access. So that sample isn't perfect. No sample is perfect, of course.
Exactly. So like what we see is that like this sample is skewed toward more educated respondents. If we break it down by education, however, we did some validation checks using Pew Research Center's global data, and we do see that on most items, we're pretty close to those surveys that used more traditional methods of collecting data worldwide.
And so what you have here is this really pretty rich reservoir of data for people from hundreds of places across the globe. And when you dive in, what you really find is that there are indeed, maybe not shockingly, really vast differences in the way that people understand and feel about climate change. Let's talk a little bit about these. Just the self-perception of climate knowledge is vastly different from one place to another. Like in Finland, for example, nearly 90% of people say they know a lot about climate change. And then in Haiti, a little more than 35% say they haven't heard of climate change at all. These are very vast differences from place to place in our globe.
Yeah, exactly. So I think when it comes to knowledge questions, there's a clear pattern in terms of economic development. People in richer countries are just exposed to more information about climate change via media. They have more access to education to be able to really access and process this information. And the same cannot be said in countries with fewer economic resources. But that really ties to another point where we can't even be sure whether the way we use the term climate change is it being used in the same way in all the other countries. That's why whenever you conduct these global surveys, a huge focus is put on context-specific translations. That's where a lot of work really goes.
Yeah, that feels like that would be such a big effort, because what we're talking about here is not just scores of different languages, but then, you know, there are different cultural contexts even within language groups and different dialects within language groups. And once we kind of understand or hope we've done our best to make sure that the questions are being asked similarly across all these language and cultural barriers, we still end up with this diametrically different situation where people in some places say, yes, I understand a lot about climate change. And other people say, oh man, I've never heard of it. And we see that in different amounts in different places. Is that fully attributable to education? Is it, what's going on there?
One issue with the so-called self-reported climate change knowledge question is that a lot of people tend to overestimate or underestimate their knowledge. There's a difference when you are asking a scientific question about climate change and when you're asking people to evaluate their knowledge about climate change. So really what we do see in terms of differences around the world, unsurprisingly, way, way more people in richer countries say they know a lot about climate change. But then if we look at differences in terms of gender, way more men tend to say they know a lot about climate change.
Oh, way more men say they know a lot about everything, right?
Exactly. It's pretty, reflective.
So there's also substantial differences in people's beliefs about climate change, whether it's happening or not. And we'll talk more about the gendered aspect of this, but just from region to region, country to country. And then when we separate out nations with high per capita emissions, which tend to be rich nations, from nations with lower per capita emissions, which tend to be less rich nations, we see some substantial differences as well, just about things like whether climate change is happening.
When it comes to acknowledging that climate change is happening, the vast majorities in basically all countries and territories in the world say that, yes, the climate change is happening. Well, of course, there are differences. In some countries, it's over 90%, but then in others, it's probably somewhat closer to 70%. So there are, stronger trends of denialism in a lot of the rich countries, which are also probably related to our information landscape.
Well, there's got to be there's some degree of privilege in denialism, right? Like if you have some more advantages, you can spend your hours on the darkest corners of the internet finding information that affirms whatever you deeply want to believe, right?
It is a luxury not afforded by everyone.
Yeah. And then there's this idea of worry. Lots of variability in this subject as well. Residents of some countries express broadly more worry than others. This is worry for themselves. It's worry for future generations. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, we see that most of the people are pretty much very or somewhat worried about climate change across the world. And here, interestingly, in our data, we could see that there are some regional trends. So, for instance, in most countries in South America, the levels of worry are very, very high. They are a bit lower in Northern Europe, the US, pretty, pretty high in Sub-Saharan Africa, a bit lower in Northern Africa. So there are some regional patterns that I think warrant a bit more of investigation, but overall, I think it definitely speaks to who is physically most vulnerable to climate change and who has a buffer enabled by living in a country that is more economically developed.
It is this area of worry that I think we might most easily fall into some gendered assumptions about how women feel differently than men. The likely assumption being that women are going to be more concerned, but that it turns out that's not a blanket truth. You found that it is also different from place to place.
Really, these gender differences in climate worry, they are context dependent. And in this case, we're talking about economic context of a country. So we do talk a lot about how, oh, women are more worried about environmental problems, including climate change, because they're just socialized to worry and care, to worry and care more about such things. But then if we break down the countries by their levels of economic development, we see that this gender gap and worry is really more visible in richer countries than in poorer countries. And this is what our research shows as well.
And to understand this better, there's this framework for thinking about the ways in which different people think about climate change. This idea that people can be categorized into six groups based on their beliefs and attitudes. And let's just talk a little bit about this segmentation, this six group segmentation. First, there are the doubtful people. Who are the doubtful people?
So the doubtful people think that climate change is probably not happening, or is it just like a part of the natural cycle?
And then there's the dismissive people.
So those are people who are pretty sure, they're like even more extreme. They're sure that climate change is not happening. It's not human caused. It's not a threat. And the other thing we notice is that they oppose most climate policies.
And there's also this group, the disengaged. Talk about that.
Yeah, so those are the folks that rarely think or talk about climate change. And they, at least they say they don't know much about it.
And then there are the cautious.
The cautious still have not made up their mind, right? They are questioning things.
And then we get to the concerned people.
So the concerned people, they do acknowledge that climate change is happening. It is a serious threat. However, they do perceive that there is some temporal and spatial distance. They feel, oh, it's going to happen in the future or somewhere else.
And then we get to this other group, and I think this is where a lot of people, especially a lot of young people, stand now. This is the group that's called the alarmed.
Yes. So those are the people who have very strong climate change risk perceptions. They do believe it's happening, it's human caused, and they do believe that it's a thing that urgently needs to be taken care of. And usually they're very supportive of various climate policies.
When you group together countries with low per capita emissions, it was really interesting for me to see that there was very little statistical difference between men and women in most of these classifications. Like 45% of men were alarmed and 44% of women, and 21% of men were concerned and 23% of women. Did it surprise you to see such gender parity in these beliefs when the data started coming in?
So since I read some previous papers using different global surveys that sort of noticed this trend, this was something I was expecting to find. At the same time, it felt really amazing to have this confirmed with more data. I mean, we have so many countries and territories covered here.
There was one segment here, though, there was quite a stark difference. And we should say this is a pretty small slice overall of both groups. That's those who are dismissive. In these low emissions countries, men were much more likely to be dismissive than women. And that was true in the high emissions income countries, too. Men were the most likely group to be in that dismissive category.
Yeah. And then, of course, the proportions are, if you compare men in high per capita emission countries with men in low per capita emissions and income countries, so many more men in richer countries tend to be doubtful or dismissive in comparison to men in poorer countries. And also we keep in mind the informational landscape in those countries and the access to these resources that, you know, these groups possess. So we do talk a lot about the climate misinformation campaigns and how those are really supported by powerful players in the fossil fuel industry and sort of like enabled by the almighty internet.
One of the other places that some more substantial differences show up, again, this is in these higher emission countries, is the belief that climate change is happening. The vast majority of men and women agree that, yes, climate change is happening. But while just 6% of women said it wasn't happening, it was 12% of men. So climate denialism in these high income, high emissions countries is much higher.
Exactly. This is precisely what the data shows. And we do see that, like, if you look at, you know, like low income countries, there are barely any differences in saying yes or no to the question whether climate change exists. But in high income countries, twice as many men tend to say that, nope, it's not happening compared to women.
The data come from this survey of about 140,000 Facebook users. You and your collaborators have looked at differences in responses between countries, differences when we group these countries by per capita emissions and income, differences in gender, like we've been talking about today. All of the survey respondents were 18 or older, so I assume there have been some interesting age-related findings as well.
So this is actually something we haven't looked at yet. There are, like a few other interesting demographic breakdowns that we could use, such as urban-rural status, age, as you mentioned, education, even though like it's, you know, like skewed toward more educated respondents. Like so far, we only were able to get our hands on gender.
But that's stuff that you could access. I mean, like the repository of data is there for you to dive into if and when you're ready to do that.
Yes, absolutely.
How great is that to have this amazing data set that you can just keep, you know, jumping back into like a beautiful swimming pool?
It's a cornucopia of data, which is, you know, like a dream come true for me as a social scientist. I think we have, like, we really have more data than we have the capacity to fully analyze it.
How do we put all this data to good use? I mean, it's interesting, right? Like you and I are having this great conversation about it. I'm sure you and your fellow researchers have great conversations about it. How do then we then translate that into something that is really super useful for the world?
So I think that's where you kind of have to stop being an academic for a moment who tends to think in very overcomplicated terms and is always unsure of everything. And that's where the communication part comes in. Like what I learned as a postdoc here is really how to do research that is understandable for broader audiences. And even in terms of, you know, like short research pieces like this one we published, it's way less complicated than the regular academic papers we write, but we get so much positive feedback just through our newsletters with people reaching out and wanting to hear more. I think the other thing, if you have the capacity as a research organization, really having people who work on partnerships, like we have a partnerships team, actually, and this is a team of people who are really working toward bringing these findings to a broader civil society and government and organizations to help them really build capacity. And especially in the U.S. context, right, one of the things of why Climate Change in the American Mind survey is so important is that, like, we do show that there's a huge support for the development of renewable energy. And a lot of people are actually very worried about climate change. So this is something, you know, you would bring to policymakers or NGOs or various advocates to help them, you know, like build the public and political will for climate action.
That is Maria Werner. She is a researcher at the Yale School of the Environment, where her work is focused on comparative politics with a specific emphasis on climate change and public opinion. Maria, thank you.
Thank you, Matthew. It was a pleasure.
Undisciplined is a production of Utah Public Radio. And if you happen to live in Utah, you can listen to us on UPR every Thursday morning at 10:30. If you miss us then, you can listen to every episode of Undisciplined wherever you get your podcasts. Our program is supported by the College of Humanities and Social Sciences at Utah State University. And from listeners like you, you can support our work at donate.nprstations.org/UPR. Our producer is Reagan Edelman. Our theme music is Little Idea by Benjamin Tissot. And I'm Matthew LaPlante. Thanks for listening. Now go have big ideas.